This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us. We're here on The Morning Run. I'm Lynn Mark, and I'm here with Julian Ng and Wang Xiaoning. Now, on Friday, the U.S. allowed tariffs to increase to 25% from 10% on $200 billion worth of Chinese-made goods. Now, President Donald Trump also ordered staff to begin the paperwork to impose levies at the same rate on the more than $300 billion worth of everything else China exports to the U.S. Now, while that sounds pretty bad for trade tensions, U.S. stocks, however, managed to close in the green.
That's right. It was pretty choppy trading in the U.S. markets on Friday. The Dow Jones fell as much as 1.3% at one point, but closed up 0.5%. The S&P 500 also closed up just under 0.5%. And the Nasdaq at one point was down almost 2%, but closing up at about 0.1%.
It looks like trade tensions are set to continue, and President Trump has implied that he has the upper hand in the China trade talks and laid out a fresh threat to China in the protracted tariff dispute that has sent global markets into a vicious roller coaster ride. In a pair of statements, which of course via Twitter, the president claimed that China was attempting to wait out till the 2020 U.S. presidential elections in a hope that a Democrat would win.
So it is like trying to ask the U.S. citizens not to vote for Democrats because that would be a win for China.
Yes, so this comes after Beijing and Washington failed last week to break an impasse in talks. And there's been a lot of anxiety over the prospect of a deepening trade dispute between the US and China that's been weighing on stock markets as well all week. And the developments have resulted in a resurgence of stock market turbulence. If you take a look at Trump's actual tweets, he said that he thinks that China thought they were being beaten so badly in the recent negotiations that they may as well wait for the next election. And the only problem for them is that, according to him, they know that he's going to win because he has the best employment and economic numbers in U.S. history.
We all know that the race for presidency, that 2020 is hotting up. There are a gazillion candidates on the Democrat side.
11, so, right? Is it 11?
Is it 11? Okay. And I think so. Donald Trump really wants to just egg on the other side so that to try in the early days to sway some decision towards the Republican side.
Well, he's been actually quite lucky. I mean, US has one of the lowest unemployment levels in decades, and the economy is doing really well despite global a slowdown in global trade. So he's got the economy behind him. But I think at the end of the day, American politics is so divided. So we'll see in November 2020 how they vote.
Actually, some would argue that a lot of these economic gains didn't come from Trump policies himself, but started way before that when the quantitative easing was put in place at that point in time.
But it's not like Trump is going to say that, right?
Right. Obviously.
So to get a better understanding of the situation, we speak to Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer of Jevons Global out of Sydney. Thanks for joining us, Kingsley. As we earlier discussed, US stocks pulled off a recovery to see gains on Friday despite the implementation of higher tariffs. What was behind the swing here from red to green?
I think maybe that was something of a relief rally. Look, there is a very divided opinion at the moment. Obviously, with this move by President Trump to increase tariffs again, there is a huge risk down the track that we see a further escalation into a full-blown trade war. I think after the initial shock last week with markets selling off, investors came to the view that maybe this was a negotiating tactic and that we would see some resolution in the coming quarter. Obviously, nobody can tell at this stage, but markets may actually continue to move a little bit higher on that view until we get a little bit more clarity about what's actually going on. However, we would say that it's not a welcome development from our point of view in the investment markets. Just adds to the uncertainty and likely puts some downward pressure on global growth.
And from the investing viewpoint, Kingsley, what do you think is the way out on both sides? I mean, this is very much trying to save some face here. So for investors who are constantly on the lookout for some opportunities, do you think there is a way out here?
Hard to say. I think the respective positions of each side are relatively clear. China does seem willing to make some changes, but they want to go slowly from the present status quo, as in they're going to change as slow as they possibly can to preserve what advantages they had in the past. From the US point of view, it seems to be an all or nothing, change now all at once or there's no deal. And then that just leads to stalemate. So I think it's hard to see really a path forward there in terms of the negotiations, in our view. But from a corporate perspective, there are many companies in the US and elsewhere that have already reported that the tariffs didn't really affect their business that much because they're able to shift production to other locations. So I think that's what a lot of investors will be looking at. They'll be looking at which companies have been able to weather the initial tariff storm and those that may actually not necessarily do well, but at least not be harmed greatly by this new development.
And moving away from trade talks, let's talk about Uber, which finally went public last week. Despite pricing themselves at the lower end of the range at $45, the shares actually opened pretty weakly and opened at $42 and actually closed at $41.57, registering a fall of just under 8%. Now, Uber has a valuation of $70 billion, quite a distance from, I think, market's initial lofty $120 billion valuation that was talked about. So what's your take on the Uber IPO?
Well, firstly, I think the successful element of the Uber IPO was their ability to raise $8 billion in cash. Remember, when these companies go and float, that money does go into the coffers of the company. Since it's a negative cash burn company at quite a high rate, that $8 billion at least gives Uber some firepower to stick it out with their plan to eventually become profitable. However, from an investor perspective, I think that the lesson in the aftermarket is that, you know, that valuation is probably still too high, and I think the reasons for that are becoming more apparent with every passing day. I mean, let's consider that in London, for example, there's been a recent strike, if you will, where Uber drivers stopped using the app in order to make a bid for a better condition in terms of their payment. And the real issue, I think, for a lot of these gig economy firms is that where there is some capital involved, namely a car, that's being funded by the driver, it's not clear at all that what Uber drivers are making is sufficient to cover both their living expenses and also the depreciation costs on the car, operating costs, insurance and other things, and also their cost of capital. And I think that this economic model, we'll have to just see if it works, but my view is in the longer run, Uber's probably going to shrink the profitability rather than grow the rates.
Now, Kingsley, despite the bad start, some analysts have been comparing Uber with Amazon. What do you think of this? Do you feel similarly?
I don't. And let me explain that the reason for that is not necessarily a judgment on who is leading the companies. It's more that the Amazon growth model, such as it was with low profitability, it didn't mean that they needed to go to market constantly for new capital. In fact, the biggest success of Jeff Bezos in the market in running Amazon was that he really didn't need to go to the market to raise capital because although they were non-profitable, they had enough internal cash generation to fund their growth. So he just had a simply different attitude. I could be profitable if I wanted to any day of the week. I choose not to be. Okay. Now he's choosing to be profitable.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kingsley. That was Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global out of Sydney. We'll be right back with more local news for you after this, so stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.